We're going to call this, we now have a quorum, so we'll be calling the meeting, the committee to order. I'm glad everybody could make it, but I'm going to do a little change-up this morning. Seems how we have the economic development piece of deed coming. I'd like to have as many people here as possible, members here as possible, to kind of go over it. So we're going to jump around a little bit after the meeting, the minutes, the approval of the minutes. I'm going to call up House File 374, Jay Zong, Representative Jay Zong, Unemployment Insurance Advisory Committee's recommendations from 2018. So, with that, would Representative Eklund, would you, you've looked at the minutes, haven't you?
I have, Mr. Chair.
Would you move them, sir?
I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Any additions or corrections? Seeing none. All those in favor of approving the minutes from February 5th, 2019, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Representative Zong, could you move to the witness table and we'll move your bill?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have an amendment.
Representative Zong, you might want to move your House File 374 to Ways and Means.
All right. I'd like to move House File, what was the number again? 374 to the Ways and Means Committee.
do you have an amendment?
Yes, I do. The amendment is from deed, and it's removing garnishment provisions.
Okay. You're moving which amendment, Representative Zong?
It is removing garnishment provisions, the A-19.
Up in the right-hand corner, is it the A-1 or the A-3?
The one I have here says A-19-01-0014. So whatever you have, then we'll go with that. This is what was sent to me from staff.
Mr. Wheat.
Chair Mahoney, members, I don't think the A-19-0014 made it into the committee packets, but the two amendments that are in the packet, which is A-19-003 and the A-1 amendment, together do the same thing as the 0014 amendment, with one minor technical correction on the A-1. So together they would be deeds, fixes, amendments, and removing the garnishment provision in Article 4.
What is the technical piece on the A? Oh, I am. Which committee? Which amendment is it on?
It's on the A-1, Mr. Chair.
And the technical piece?
On page 1, line 2, delete 22 and insert 13.
Okay. Do you have those amendments, Representative Zong?
No, I do not, Mr. Chair.
Put the page. Get those for him, and we'll do the A-1 first and then the A-03.
All right, looks like I have two amendments here, Mr. Chair. So I will move the A-19.
How about the A-1 first?
The A-1.
Thank you. Representative Zong, we have to make a technical amendment to it. So, and I'll make that. On the A-1 amendment, I move that we, on page one, line two, we, after the word page, we strike 22 and insert 13. Any comments on that amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Now we have the amendment in the way that needs to be.
Okay, and then there's the A-19.
And Mr. Weeks, what does the A-1 do?
Chair Mahoney, members, A-1 deletes a section in the bill that would change the way garnishment works for DUI tax overpayments and benefit overpayments, so garnishment of wages. And it gets rid of that from the bill.
Do you have any comments on the amendment, Representative Zong?
No, Mr. Chair, this came from Deed.
Are there any comments from the committee? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Now we go to the A, which one? This one, right? A-19, you care to move your A-19 amendment?
Yes, I'd like to move the A-19.
Sooner or later, the snow's starting to affect me. I can't even talk this morning. And your A-19 does what? Or you want to do the call a friend like I just did?
What you just did.
Mr. Weeks, would you care to explain the A-19 amendment?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. The A-19 amendment is not intended to be substantive at all. It makes a number of stylistic and technical changes to the 2018 Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council bill. Some things are just moved around, some wording changes, and then it updates all the effective dates for passage this year.
Thank you. Having moved the A-19, is there any discussion on the A-19 amendment? Representative Back.
Yeah, Chair, so can we just get a little bit more detail? This is a pretty big amendment of what it actually does with unemployment. Can we get a little bit more detail from somebody? Just pushing it through.
Representative Mr. Wheat,
nonpartisan or something.
Mr. Chair, members, are you interested on what the amendment changes in the bill or what the bill does?
Well, what does the amendment does to the bill would be, first of all, because we are on the amendment there, please.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair Mahoney, Representative Becker, my understanding and my read-through of the amendment is that these move some things around and delete some technical sections in the bill, otherwise change some wording, but my reading is that it doesn't change the substance of the bill as it was and as it's summarized in the bill summary. But if someone from Deed wanted to elaborate.
Would you care to elaborate? I'm going to take it that you're from Deed and you might have some conversations on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jim Hegman. I'm the Deputy Program Director for UI. We would agree that the amendments do not change the meaning. Some effective dates had to be changed from the 2018 bill, and then there were some drafting errors that we caught and corrected.
Representative Backer, would you care for any more detail?
I think we'll get it in the form and then get more detail from there. Thank you, Chair.
All those in favor of the A-19 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Okay, we have the bill in the order that the author would care to have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to start by providing a little bit of information about the UI Advisory Council. This bipartisan group has advised Minnesota's unemployment insurance program for more than 20 years. It includes employer representatives from organizations like the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the National Federation of Independent Business, the Minnesota Recruiting and Staffing Association, the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association, and the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. It also includes representatives from the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the Laborers Union, Legal Aid, and a variety of other individuals and organizations that have an interest in unemployment insurance policy issues. Finally, the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council has a total of 8 legislative members, 2 from the majority and minority caucuses of each legislative body. The UI Advisory Council meets several times each fall to review initiative legislative proposals as well as legislative proposals brought forward by other stakeholders. Any proposals that draw opposition from legislators or other council members are modified or dropped, while items that get the group's approval are incorporated into the UI Advisory Council bill for the following year. The bill before us is a duplicate of last year's UI Advisory Council bill, which passed the Senate in 2018 with a vote of 59-0. That bill did not receive a floor vote in the House because it was incorporated into the omnibus supplemental bill, which was eventually vetoed by Governor Dayton. This bill is identical to the one introduced last year, except for a few relatively minor technical amendments from the department. I'll turn over to staff in the department to answer any questions about the bill.
Would you care to tell what the bill does? And I think we're going to call on the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The bill makes a number of relatively minor changes to the statute. We typically ask to clarify language and make it a little bit easier to administer. Our intent is not to change the outcomes, but simply to address gaps in the language that we had noticed over the years. I'm sorry, I introduced myself already, I believe.
Yes, you did.
With me is Katrina Galstead. She is our Chief Unemployment Law Judge and will be assisting. The items in the bill were discussed at the Advisory Council. We don't view them as controversial in any way. We'd be happy to answer questions if any exist. If you'd like us to walk through the bill, we can certainly do that as well.
Are there any? Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I have some questions here. I want to make clarification. I understand this addresses some things dealing with travel salespeople. Changes in here from what I can get. Can you clarify on that regarding UI coverage for traveling salespeople?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a small change to clarify the language regarding coverage when an individual works in multiple states. The existing language is very old. It was part of model language that we received from USDOL many, many years ago and becomes administratively difficult to assign. We are trying to clean the language up and make it clearer for employers and others where the employment would be reported for unemployment insurance purposes. This applies when workers are in multiple states, and we're trying to make it clear that if the work is done over 50% in Minnesota, then the work should be assigned to Minnesota, the wages should be assigned to Minnesota, and the taxes should be paid in Minnesota for that work. The old language was ambiguous and unclear in some cases, and also assumed that we had knowledge of activities in other states, which we would not have at the time the wages are reported.
Okay, Representative Backer?
Yeah, Chair, follow up. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Also, I understand that there's changes of employment misconduct. What was that in regards with, and I'm sorry, what was your name again?
My name is Jim Hegman.
What was your last name again?
Excuse me, I've got a cold as well. Hegman.
Okay, Mr. Hegman, if you could go through that there in regards with the difference of definition of employment misconduct and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member, representative. I believe I'll let Ms. Galstead answer that question.
Okay, thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Yes, my name is Katrina Galstead. I'm the Director of Appeals and Legal Affairs and the Chief Unemployment Law Judge for Unemployment Insurance. The proposed change to the definition of employment misconduct is not intended to be a change in how we would apply the law. It's to clarify based on misunderstandings that were occurring from a lot of our parties when cases came before unemployment law judges. It's been defined as a serious violation of the standards of behavior the employer has a right to reasonably expect or substantial lack of concern for the employment. This proposed change would remove that last portion of a substantial lack of concern for the employment. From our understanding, that would not have any known impact, as we're not aware of any cases where it's turned on something where they could find an act that would be a substantial lack of concern for the employment, but not a serious violation of the standards of behavior the employer has a right to reasonably expect.
Okay. Representative Backer.
Chair, thank you. So overall, you guys have dug into this a lot more than we have.
Yes.
So, and I'm going to speak on behalf of my small business employers, maybe they in District 12A, where they may have 3, 4, 5, 10 people max. How can you walk through me just, you know, the helicopter, how this would affect those employers in greater Minnesota or even in the metro area and so forth? These changes, is it good, bad, or ugly? Or
our understanding, it would have no impact.
No impact?
No impact.
So would that then this, I'm sorry, Chair, follow-up question?
Please.
Okay. So then the changes are more going to be beneficial to the employee?
It would not be beneficial to either employer or employee. It would not change, from our understanding, who would be found to have been discharged for reasons of employment misconduct.
Okay. Chair, follow-up?
Right ahead.
Okay. I know this is really exciting for everybody. So, so overall, what this, all these changes that you're trying to do is streamline the process. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. That's it, Chair. Thank you.
Representative Haley, you had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Just to understand the process, each biennium of how we evaluate UI, my understanding is the UI Advisory Council meets and then provides recommendations just like we do with, you know, other departments. We get a department bill in some other areas. Is this going to be considered the Advisory Council's recommendations for this year, or will there be another proposal coming from the Advisory Council?
Representative Haley, I expect there to be another bill from the UI Advisory Council or from the department. I can't predict whether they'll bring the bill forward or not, but I wouldn't see any reason why they wouldn't. This is the bill from last year with a couple of changes, which Section 4 was deleted out, which had to do with some updating of garnishment of wages in order to get overpayments of unemployment benefits back to the fund. We took that out because there were some concerns from last year that came up. But yes, I expect there will be another bill yet this year that will go in the omnibus policy bill or in the jobs omnibus bill, one or the other.
Okay. I guess, Mr. Chair, I would just ask at that time that we, as a committee, we have a chance to merge or marry these two different proposals so we're not doing contradictory things when we get another recommendation from the Advisory Council if we're moving this forward today.
Well, I don't know why. I don't know that they would be contradictory. Most of the unemployment, the bills that come forth from the Department on unemployment compensation, Representative Zong listed the people on the Unemployment Advisory Committee, and everybody from the Minnesota Chamber to small businesses, large businesses, labor. There are some religious groups that show up there. I know there is the legal aid group that shows up there. You can have them repeated. I don't think it's necessary, though. And it's either whether it's this bill or any other bill, there's only been two controversial bills in my out of the UI department in my 20 years here. One was when we lowered the UI. Once in a while, used to have an excess, and we discussed for a number of years how we would keep that down. And I think it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago, we came up with a formula that allowed them to meet their federal guidelines and good fiscal policy. And those are the only two controversial ones, pieces. So, but yes, there is likely to be another bill later.
Okay. I appreciate the explanation and the background. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions? Any other questions? Seeing none. All those in favor of those, you have any final words, Representative Zong?
As a side note, organizations and communities of color that care about low-wage workers' access to UI do not feel that the UI equity concerns are represented in this bill. And or the forthcoming 2019 UID policy bill. So Representative Hassan and I look forward to bringing another bill that will help the legislature to begin conversation about UI access to equity for all workers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Care to renew your motion to the to move it to Ways and Means.
Yes, I'd like to move the House File 374 as amended to be moved through the Ways and Means Committee.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? On its way to Ways and Means. And now that we have most of our members have been able to get through the snow, why don't we bring down the department to finish up their presentation from, was it last week? So members, they got through almost everything when they did their original presentation. The last one was the economic development one, and I always have believed that the Department of Economic Development and Employment and Economic Development, this is one of their bigger, this has the most pieces to it that move around. So I thought we'd at least give everyone a chance to go through what the department does in its economic development area and ask questions. So please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin McKinnon. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at DEED. As Chair Mahoney mentioned, we didn't quite get to this last week, but the Economic Development Division, we serve as the principal agency, obviously, for statewide economic development, and we administer a variety of programs that assist with business recruitment, business expansion, business retention, international trade, broadband infrastructure, along with community development initiatives. We work every day to make sure that Minnesota is a place that businesses and communities can thrive and grow, and that they are vital and have the infrastructure necessary to support business activity. Our division is organized into five main business units. We have our broadband division, our business development division, our business finance division, our community finance office, and our trade office. Our business and trade office provide a variety of tools to businesses from not only starting and managing a business, but also to the financial assistance that we do provide. Our community assistance programs, such as our broadband and other infrastructure programs, provide the resources that communities need to help businesses be successful and for the communities to remain vital. Everything we do is in partnership with local governments, higher education, or nonprofit entities, and a wide variety of other stakeholders. We could not possibly reach all the businesses and communities in the state without a lot of these partners. Likewise, our local partners actually rely on a lot of the state programs to help them make their development happen in their communities. More globally, the Economic Development Division has about 65 employees. We manage about 30 active programs. We receive about $350 million per biennium. Now, there's large buckets of that. About $200 million is general obligation bond funding that's passed by the legislature that comes to us. About $100 million is in general fund, and about $35 million we receive in federal funding. We do about 500 grant awards a year, and at any given time we have about 1,500 open grant contracts that we monitor. About 60% of our work goes to, and our grants go to, communities. About 25% goes to business, and about 15% goes to nonprofit organizations and to higher education institutions. So the first division or business unit that I'll talk about is our business development office. We provide various services for location and expansion for businesses not only in Minnesota but those considering the state. We have seven business development representatives who work closely with the communities and the businesses to help them locate and expand in those communities throughout Minnesota. We do have four staff members who are actually based in greater Minnesota, in Duluth, Bemidji, Mankato, and Winona as well. Each of these folks also work within industries and serve more statewide in some of those capacities. A couple of just notes I'd like to mention here about some of the things that they've taken on. Shovel-ready site certification, we help communities become a little bit more prepared for development. In other words, we help businesses mitigate their risks by preparing sites that are certified, which means the planning, the zoning, the surveys, and those types of things are done. It just becomes more efficient for businesses to make these decisions and to do their due diligence. I'm pleased to announce that we have eight developments in these sites, and we have another purchase agreement pending right now. We also coordinate the Minnesota Business First Stop program, which started in 2012 more formally under this name. And that's a partnership between nine state agencies that get together to help in the development process for complex projects. We help to coordinate licensing, permitting, regulatory issues that might overlap multiple agencies to accomplish a business development project. Also within this group is our workforce development training grants that are provided through the Economic Development Division. The first one is the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership. This is a program where business partners with higher education institutions on collaborative training programs. These are designed specifically for the business needs and are available to incumbent and new employees of those businesses. Training, we offer grants of up to $400,000 and it must be matched, and we in fiscal year 18 did almost 40 grants to the higher education institutions, training almost 10,000 workers across the state. And equally important, we leveraged over $15 million in funding from the businesses and the higher education institutions. The other program that I'd like to mention here that we run is the Job Training Incentive Program. This program is only available in greater Minnesota. And it is only available to new employees that are hired at wage levels at or above the county average. These funds do not require a higher education partner, but it's certainly encouraged when possible. In fiscal year 18, we awarded 10 grants and trained over 270 workers and leveraged over $1 million in additional investment.
Mr. McKinnon?
Yes.
Can you explain why those grants are only done in greater Minnesota? I think
Mr. Chair and members, that's what the law, that's how the law is written. It is only available at the 7 County metro area.
I must not have been there the day that was passed. Please proceed.
Thank you.
I know you were.
also in our business development unit is our Small Business Assistance Office. This is an office that serves as a point of first contact for individuals and firms that are seeking questions about the startup operation or expansion of business in Minnesota. The SBAO provides no-fee telephone and email consultation services, as well as produces a variety of guidebooks and publications. For example, in 2018, we handled over 32,000 calls from various individuals and businesses who had questions wide-ranging from what type of business structure should I form to how can you help me understand a little bit of the tax ideas about the consequences of each business structure to permitting guidance and obviously a lot of referrals to other areas that really are more the regulators of some of these requirements. This office also distributed over 120,000 copies of their guidebooks in print, CD, and digital format. You might be familiar with some of the publications like How to Start a Business in Minnesota and more recently our Data Security Guide. This group also manages our Business Development Competitive Grant Program, for which the legislature provides us just shy of $3 million each biennium. This is a program that we provide funding to nonprofit organizations for them to provide technical assistance to small businesses across the state. Also within our business development office is the Small Business Development Center program. This is a program that provides expertise and guidance for small business owners throughout the state through a statewide network. Our consultants help small businesses from pre-venture to startup to established businesses. They work on cash flow management, they work on marketing, they work on business succession and a variety of other topics. This is one-on-one counseling, which is confidential and at no cost to the client. These services are actually provided through nine regional centers. We have one in the Twin Cities at the University of St. Thomas, eight others in Greater Minnesota. And all of these centers are, actually at higher education institutions. We also have various satellite centers across the state that are often served by some of the nonprofits work with the regional centers, as well as some local economic development authorities. In 2018, we provided almost 37,000 hours of technical assistance and served over 3,700 clients. Obviously, there's some larger things that they've produced. They went on to create 248 businesses, leveraged $135 million in capital. That means the businesses that they worked with were able to go to banks and other sources for this capital. They also do a variety of training events, over almost 160 last year across the state, and we really specialize in targeted areas as well, with training for veterans, those interested in exporting, entrepreneurs age 50, which we call encore entrepreneurship, and youth, for example. This is funded by the Small Business Administration, so 50% of the money for this program comes from the federal government. We match it through a small administrative piece through DEED, but also really rely upon our higher education institutions and our communities to get the rest of the funding for that.
Representative Stevenson has a question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. My question is, can you tell us a little bit about how you find the projects that are supported by these programs?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, so some of these programs, just as an example, the Small Business Development Centers, they are obviously located in regions across the state. They do individual marketing and things to various clients. They do all these seminars, and a lot of people hopefully hear about it, and if not, are invited to a variety of the seminars and things that they might attend. We try to integrate it as much as we can with our economic developers across the state who are our partners in from a referral perspective. A lot of people also get referred to the SBDCs from our Small Business Assistance Office that receives all those calls every year. So those are probably the main ways for those two programs that those would come into play. I wouldn't say a lot of the larger businesses really aren't going here for services. These are more for small and medium-sized businesses, which, of course, there's well over 100,000 in the state, and ranging from retail to any manufacturing to a variety of industries.
Thank you.
Representative Kloffman.
Thank you, Chair. Vice Chair. Chair. Commissioner, can you give us a idea of how the projects split between the Metro and Greater Minnesota and the monetary divisions as well?
Mr. Chair, members, I will talk a little bit about that in some of our business financing programs in some of the slides that are upcoming. But more importantly, with the SBDC program, just as an example, eight of our nine service centers are actually located in Greater Minnesota, and so a lot more people get served in greater Minnesota through the SBDC program than do just in the metro. But I will talk a little bit more about the breakdown here and have more specific numbers actually for you in a second.
Representative Mara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was part of my question also. I think I heard you say for the Small Business Development Center, is this one in the metro area at St. Thomas, and you have eight in the rural. And so I understand why the greater Minnesota is getting benefiting in a huge number over the metro. But how do you make those connections, even with, like, for small businesses in, like, communities of color? What does that look like?
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, I mentioned our satellite centers for these regional centers that we have. For example, MEDA is the satellite center of the SBDC. That's a way that we work into communities of color. NDC previously was a satellite center of the SBDC program.
Mr. Chair, and what happened to NDC in the work that it was doing to support small businesses and communities of color?
Mr. Chair, members, we had some financing. We had some funding that was available a couple of years ago. We asked NDC to help administer some of this, and that funding ran out. Of course, the organizations also have to match it, and so if NDC or other organizations can't match the funding that they're receiving, they obviously can't perform the services.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Mark.
In regards to the Workforce Development Training Grant Program, can I get a list of the Minnesota grants awards that was given within the Minnesota Job Skill Partnerships, the Job Train Incentive Programs, along with the Low Income Workers Training Program? What was funded? Could you provide a list of those?
Mr. Chair, members, absolutely, we can provide a list of those projects. What I will, I don't think I touched on this, the low-income grant training program last year, we did not do a round from the low-income grant worker program. We instead partnered with Pathways to Prosperity, which is another program in our Workforce Development Division. And administered grants through that program. And this is a program where we can only pay for training. We can't pay for support services. So we were able to add on to the funding that was available through Pathways to Prosperity through this program.
All right. Thank you.
So moving on, our business...
Representative Haley has got a question.
If you want to hold him to the end, that's fine with me as well. If you want to let him continue.
Okay, that's great. So we'll continue with the presentation. Go ahead, Deputy Commissioner.
Our Business Finance Office. Minnesota is committed to helping businesses succeed, and our Office of Business Finance oversees the state business assistance programs. In a typical year, we do about $25 million of grants, loans, and some of the tax programs that were assigned to businesses and investors to encourage business growth across the state. These funds each year leverage more than $600 million in private investment. Some of the programs you can see on the slide here that we manage through this office, there's roughly about 22 or 23 programs that are in the office. Not all are active today, but some that you may have heard of, the Job Creation Fund, the Minnesota Investment Fund, the Emerging Entrepreneur Loan Program. I will talk more specifically about those in a second. But we operate a broad range of business finance programs, and we've tried to focus on life cycle financing for these businesses. So in other words, having some kind of programming at early stage startup, serving medium-sized businesses and, of course, large businesses. We don't exclusively work with large businesses, as a lot of people are sort of somewhat misunderstood. In fact, most would be considered small that we work with, and those are businesses with less than 500 employees. So just a few examples from 2018 from the Business Finance Office. First one is the Emerging Entrepreneur Loan Program. This is a program where we provide funding to nonprofits. These nonprofits are working with businesses from a technical assistance perspective, but they are the ones that make the loan decisions and monitor all the programs or all the loans. We ultimately have final approval over how they use those funds. These funds are only available to targeted groups, minorities, women, veterans, disabled, and low-income population across the state. We funded 52 projects in fiscal year 18, so it was quite busy. And, in fact, 32 of those projects were actually in Greater Minnesota. These loans actually leveraged over $6.6 million in private capital. So basically what this does is you sometimes partner with banks, and we take some of the equity position as well from the or help the entrepreneur with the equity position that they have in the business. A lot of the industries that this program funds, education, health, hospitality, transportation, and a limited amount of manufacturing. The Job Creation Fund is another program. This is a pay for performance program promoting investment in real property and job creation. It offers rebates for investment in real property and facilities and per employee depending on the wage levels. In 2018, we did about $9 million worth of grant awards, and $5.2 million of that went to Greater Minnesota. These projects leveraged $215 million in investment, and these businesses will go on to create 1,300 new jobs in Minnesota. The wage levels for these businesses in fiscal year 18 was average across the state of almost $29 an hour. $36 an hour in the Twin Cities, and just over $20 an hour in Greater Minnesota.
Deputy Commissioner, I've got a quick question.
Yeah.
Can you give me just a snapshot? What is the interest rate for some of the finances that we give?
Mr. Chair, members, for example, the Emerging Entrepreneur Loan Program, this is a program that allows, we allow certain interest rates, and then the nonprofit determines actually what it ultimately is. It ends up being probably between 5 and 7%. This is the money that the nonprofits use to actually administer the loans, and they get to keep the interest on these loans as well. So that's typically where it is on the Emerging Entrepreneur Loan Program. The next program that I'm going to talk about, well, actually, let me back up. The Job Creation Fund, these are grants. So those are awarded to businesses after they have performed. So essentially, if we make an award to a business in year one, maybe in year three is when we are ultimately paying out on those awards. The Minnesota Investment Fund is a little different, and that's the next program that I'll talk about. This is a program that typically provides between 0 and 3% money, and those rates are determined by the communities in which are actually doing the loans.
Could you specify which communities are getting the 0 to 3%?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, and it might help if I explain what the Minnesota Investment Fund is here. The Minnesota Investment Fund, we offer loans to businesses to support capital investment and job creation. All of these loans go through a city. So essentially the department provides a grant to the city or local government unit, basically, and then the city ends up loaning the money to the business. That's how that program works. And there's typical, the most we can do is 50% of any investment. We rarely ever do even close to that. Typically, we're more in the 10% range of investments. So as an example, if a company is investing $10 million, we might come up to the maximum of $1 million, and that would be your 10% sort of position that we come in with a loan. In 2018, we did $11 million worth of loans across the state. $8.2 million was actually in Greater Minnesota. These leveraged almost $375 million in private investment, and these businesses plan to create more than 1,200 jobs across the state. Wage levels, $26 an hour in the Twin Cities and almost $19 an hour in Greater Minnesota for all these projects, averaged out to about $21, $22 an hour. Moving on, our Minnesota Trade Office, another business unit that resides in the Economic Development Division. This is an office that provides training and expertise for small and mid-sized companies that they need to export goods and services successfully across the globe. We provide educational opportunities, technical assistance, one-on-one counseling to almost 2,000 interested exporters each year. We also serve as the protocol office and welcome visitors from all over the globe, regardless of whether that's high-level dignitaries, elected officials from other countries. The Trade Office also has regional managers in Minnesota with expertise in geographic regions and also industry sectors. And geographic regions across the globe is what I'm referring to. We also have representatives in a variety of other countries, Canada, Mexico, Japan, the European Union, United Kingdom, as examples. These are contract employees provided from some money that we received from the legislature. Those folks are there to help our businesses navigate and get their products into those countries. Those folks also are sort of the first line for any companies that are in those locations that may want to have a location in Minnesota. And so we work on a lot of investment projects through these offices as well. During fiscal year 18, we partnered with many different organizations around the state, hosted 20 seminars ourselves, and participated in over 130 events across the state. So export of goods, services, and agricultural commodities to foreign countries is an extremely important part of our economy and our economic development efforts at DEED. This accounts for $35 billion of revenue annually to the state. More than 8,000 companies across the state are exporters, and that supports more than 118,000 jobs statewide. We are actively seeking more exporters every day. Our exports from just manufacturing, mining, and agriculture are product-related, reached $21 billion in 2017, and our companies are in over 200 countries across the globe.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner, I'm just wondering, how has President Trump's tariffs impacted the work of the Trade Office and the ability of Minnesota companies to export? I see agriculture is on the list of areas, obviously, you work in, and I know that's been hard hit. I'm wondering if you can speak to that.
Mr. Chair, members, actually, we work very closely with the Department of Agriculture as well here, so they do a lot of that, of the agriculture work. We're focused more on the manufactured products and services. As it relates to some of the tariffs that are out there, one of the issues that we face is the uncertainty, obviously, and what it actually means. And I think it's in some ways too early for us to really tell what the impact has been, particularly on Minnesota companies. At this time, we sort of know the categories in which the tariffs would apply, but it's too early for us. The numbers, I don't believe, are in yet, and so we will ultimately figure that out. But it's more the uncertainty and figuring out how to deal with some of this stuff, or what's eligible, what's not eligible. You know, there's a variety of exclusions that have been applied for at the Department of Commerce, so a lot of this remains to be seen.
A follow-up question, Mr.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, sir. My understanding is the Trade Office works on exports, But the tariffs obviously include issues on imports that Minnesota companies rely on. I think my personal greatest concern is I believe it affects the steel used to create beer kegs. Has the trade office tracked any issues for Minnesota businesses based on higher prices for materials that they rely on in their manufacturing?
Mr. Chair, members, I actually have my trade director here, Gabrielle Grabot. So,
thank you.
Please go ahead and state your name.
Gabrielle Grabot, Minnesota Trade Office. Mr. Chair, members, it's an excellent question. It is very difficult to measure the tariffs and the impact of the tariffs because most of the information is private information for the companies. However, we have a better understanding on the countermeasures that are applied because those affect the export of the state. We have created and we keep updated a very good analysis that is very simple to understand of the four major areas of the world that have countermeasured the tariffs from the U.S. that I would be delighted to send. And to because it's quite depending on the EU, Canada, Mexico, or China. The numbers really vary, and the countermeasures, how it affects the exports, will really vary from market to market and from product to product.
Okay. I'd appreciate that. Yes. Thank you both very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please proceed, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you. So as it relates to our trade. Our top export markets are Canada, Mexico, China, Japan, Germany, and Korea. No surprise that Canada and Mexico are our largest trading partners. About 60% of what we do goes to those two countries. We also manage what's called the State Trade and Export Promotion Program. This is a program that offers grants to small and medium-sized businesses to help them financially support export-related activities. So going to various trade shows across the globe, making connections and doing marketing to potential distributors and buyers from other countries. In 2018, we did 55 awards, and about a quarter of those were to businesses located in Greater Minnesota. These are very small grants, up to about $5,000, that hopefully encourage some of these small businesses to take a step to the international market. And finally, the last business unit that we that is within the Economic Development Division that I'll talk about today is our Office of Community Finance. This is a office that provides grant and loan programs that invest in state and federal dollars alongside private sector capital and other public sector capital to support communities to grow businesses, jobs, increase the tax base, and create a desirable place to live and to do business. These funds are awarded across the state to empower communities to grow and drive revitalization. This office manages about 16 programs and over 100 special appropriations. Some of the programs you can see listed up here, I will talk about them in slides upcoming. But I did want to touch on the special appropriations. Every year we receive somewhere between 25 and 35 special appropriations, generally general obligation bond funding. These are funds that we provide local governments for various public projects across the state. Science Museum would be an example, Nicollet Mall, convention centers that we've done in the past across Greater Minnesota, those types of appropriations that we deal with. So first of all, I'll get into our site cleanup and redevelopment programs. Redevelopment of contaminated and blighted properties is essential for communities to stay vital and to grow. In some cases, it is the only way that some cities can grow. Many are built out, and this is the only way that they can grow and continue to build their tax base. So first of all, our Contamination Cleanup and Investigation Grant Program. This program focuses on cleaning up contamination below the ground. So this is a program where we would go in, remove, and partner with the community and remove 2 feet of soil to stabilize the soil so something can actually be built on it, remove the contaminants so that the development wouldn't be cause it to leak into other areas, and basically clean up the site, make it prepared for development. In fiscal year 18, we did about $9 million in grants, leveraged about $766 million of investment. Now, when we say leverage in this case, these are planned developments that would go on to these sites, as well as hoping to create over 1,400 jobs at these locations. Our redevelopment grant program and demolition loan program, these programs focus on clearing above the ground and providing infrastructure to support development. So if you're tearing down a building, if you're removing asbestos from buildings, those are the types of things that this program would fund. In 18, we did about $2 million of projects, $150 million of planned investment, and hoping to create over 1,800 jobs. These programs are important to lower the development cost to allow these projects to be feasible where redevelopment is very expensive. So in other words, we're trying to make it more palatable to do this redevelopment versus just doing some kind of greenfield development. Also within this group is our Small City Development Program. This is a program that provides funding to preserve or improve community vitality, such as residential and commercial rehabilitation and some infrastructure programs. This is a program that is actually, it's a federal program. It's run through the Housing and Urban Development Department of the federal government. This is part of the Community Development Block Grant Program. We receive, last year, for example, about $16 million from the federal government to award these grants to communities. This program is only available in non-entitlement areas across the state. So generally for us, that means it's in Greater Minnesota. The reason that is entitlement areas are places like St. Louis County. They are places like Minneapolis, St. Paul. These places receive their own money from the federal government, from HUD and CDBG, and they implement their own programs. We serve as the conduit to do a lot of very small projects and small communities across the state, many of which, you know, from Starbucks to various small communities across the state, in a lot of ways, sometimes is the only money that's going in to rehabilitate some of these homes and commercial businesses. So we're pleased that we have this program and are able to help these small communities with some of these challenges. Our infrastructure funding. This office also oversees various infrastructure programs, and generally these all use general obligation bond funds. The first one is our Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, or what we call BDPI. This, as the name indicates, is only available outside of Greater Minnesota, outside of the Seven County Metro, and this also has a small general fund appropriation of about $1.3 million per year, I believe. And generally, I think last year we received $7 or $8 million in bond funds for this program. In fiscal year 18, we did $8 million worth of grants, nine grants across the state. This funds water, sewer, road development, and all in support of business development. So think of an industrial park where a business is going to locate. You need to build out the roads. You need to build out the water and sewer. And so we help support the community install that. Our innovative business development public infrastructure program, this program is actually available statewide. And similar to BDPI, does water, sewer, roads as well. We did not do any grants in this one in 2018. However, we just awarded two projects recently, one in St. Paul and one in Carver. And finally, our Transportation Economic Development Infrastructure Program, or what we call TEDI. Some of you might be familiar with TED, which is the program over at MnDOT. We partner with MnDOT on this program and provide public infrastructure surrounding trunk highway developments, essentially. So think of MnDOT might come in and be doing an interchange. We will help the community with right-of-ways, with roads leading into the interchange, those types of things. And typically, we really only award grants when MnDOT also has money, and MnDOT didn't receive any money last year for that program. It does require some sort of business commitment to expand or utilize the infrastructure, again, that's an evaluation process with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any other questions that there might be.
Thank you so much, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Haley has got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. McKinnon, for your presentation. I have a few questions, if that's okay.
Go ahead, Representative Haley.
First, a selfish one. Can you forward me a contact name and number for the small cities development grants? I have a particular request from one of my communities, so I'd like to chat about that.
Absolutely.
And then these are maybe kind of broader questions. For can you just describe how local city or unit of government, what's the kind of the first line connection to your office? So it's, we have a Port Authority, we have an EDA, we have a Workforce Development Center, we have the city, you know, a higher ed institution. That's a lot of folks playing in this arena of economic development, and you just went through a lot of agencies, different grants, et cetera. How does a community sort through all that in the most effective way, or a business?
Deputy Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, that's a very good question. And as I indicated earlier, we have seven business development representatives who are based regionally. Those typically are the first point of contact for, you know, businesses, port authorities, cities, higher education institutions, when they are looking at anything within Economic Development Division. Does that mean that they work on or solve all the issues? No. The people that are based in these regions really are also charged with knowing where to direct all these people and what programs to direct them to, what other services that we may not even provide. It might be RDCs, it might be McKnight Foundations, it might be other federal programs. So these business development reps are really charged with understanding and making sure that we're trying to address and being that front door, if you will. We also do a variety of training events all across the state for many of those partners that you just mentioned. Last year, for example, we did about 130 training sessions across the state in various communities, not only just to help people understand what our programs are, but more importantly, to provide that contact or provide some context to how you even get into some of these programs.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, it might be helpful for us if we could get a list of those seven regional centers and who those contacts are, if you can forward that.
Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, absolutely, we can do that.
Can I continue, Mr. Chair?
Representative Haley.
Thank you. Mr. McKinnon, another kind of higher level question. As we seek to be a state of innovation, as I look at all these programs, you're responding to requests from businesses or from communities. Is there, on the other side, kind of push and pull economics? Are you also reaching out and promoting innovation or grants or loans to focus on key industries that you believe our state needs to succeed or grow and expand? More of the, I guess, you know, pushing something out to help our state in that area versus being responsive, if that makes sense. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Deputy Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, generally, our agency, just as an overview, about 85% of what we do, 90% of what we do, is work on projects and promotion to businesses that are already here. About 10%, maybe 15%, always in partnership with others, is where we do a lot more promotion outside of the state, whether that's internationally or domestically. When it comes to what types of industries that we're promoting, what are we working on, it tends to be more advanced industries that are expanding and particularly looking at certain parts of our state. And when I say advanced industries, that could be, you know, 3D printing, it could be software development, it could be a variety of different industries that, yes, we are thinking about, and yes, we are trying to support. Medical technology would be obviously a great example of that. When it comes to innovation, and if you're talking about small business innovation, that's a little different. We do, we partner with a lot of organizations there. We don't have a lot of programming that is essentially targeted at very small businesses that are trying to raise capital or to advance their concept and prove it so they could raise money. We do have, you know, angel tax credit would be a sort of a good example of how the state's tried to address some of those capital needs. We do have a couple of programs within DEED, innovation vouchers, as an example. We've recently done a seed funding round for small companies. We're great supporters of the Minnesota Cup. As an example, we tend to understand and work with a lot of the accelerators and incubators across the state to do this, and certainly work with the University of Minnesota and some of the technologies that they're commercializing out of there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just one follow-up, please.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that response. I think that's something that we need to put a shine a light on more in the state, and it would be interesting to me and maybe some of the other members, as you do things like the Minnesota Cup and some of these innovation grants, to bring that back to us and share with us what you're seeing, what's growing, what entrepreneurs are finding success in our state, what are their needs. I don't know if you're familiar with an organization called Ignite Minnesota, but that is trying to create that ecosystem of innovation and support entrepreneurs. So again, more of a statement than a question, but I would be interested long-term, you know, what is our trajectory as a state to succeed in some of these new technologies and new business areas? So thank you.
Thank you for that, Representative. Yeah, very interested in that.
I think I'll give the chair the last question, Chair Mahoney, and we'll proceed to the next hearing.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Excuse me. I had to present in the bonding committee, so quickly, could you talk about how we compare in spending for economic development compared to other states around us and or nationally? And I'll give you 60 seconds. How's that sound? Because we have another bill.
Mr. Chair, members, from a spending perspective, generally Minnesota is regarded as a fairly modest state for investing in economic development programs. I don't think that's a surprise here to this committee. When it comes to sort of comparing what other states offer versus how we do business, a lot of other states offer tax expenditures. Tax expenditures, in other words, in exchange for jobs and investment. Whether or not those tax expenditures ultimately come to fruition, the business actually has that liability, those types of things is sort of another story. But a lot of states use tax incentives, so in other words, things that would be in our tax bill, as their programs. Minnesota has chosen over the past number of years, particularly with a lot of these programs, to pay for it up front and to pay for it every biennium, if you will. And so, you know, a lot of our programs obviously have caps. We have limits as to how much we can award, whereas that sort of changes it. But, Chair Mahoney, we could certainly get you and this committee some of the latest work that organizations have done in comparing how states spend for economic development expenditures.
As the chair, I may call you back to show the committee how miserly the state of Minnesota is in its economic development.
Thank you so much, Deputy Commissioner, for the presentation, and I think we will proceed to the next hearing.
Thank you very much.
You want to keep it up? Go for it.
Members, next on the agenda is Representative Stevenson's House File 319. Thank you. Members, Representative Stevenson moves that House File 319.
Unless you have one of those. You can start one-on-one side.
Me too. We know we're not going to vote for your bill.
You have no hands.
You want one?
All right. Whenever you're ready, Representative Stevenson moves that House File 319 be referred to Ways and Means.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would make that motion at this time.
We have one author's amendment to adopt before we proceed. We will adopt the amendment so it's in the form that the author wants, and we'll like then we will let him explain his bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, at this time I'd like to move the DE amendment. Just a brief explanation about this amendment, if I may. It incorporates changes requested by the Department of Commerce and deeds, some clarification language. And then for members who were in the Commerce Committee or aware of the Commerce Committee, there was some discussion with the community bankers there and some changes they wanted to see, and we had some great conversations between that hearing and this hearing and incorporated the helpful feedback that the community bankers had, and so there's some changes that they requested. So I would ask the committee to adopt the DE amendment.
Representative Stevenson. Any questions from the members on DE2? Hearing none, Representative Stevenson moves that DE2 be adopted. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. The amendment is adopted.
And Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'll now speak to the bill. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the federal government shutdown that happened earlier this year was the longest in United States history, lasting 35 days. Over the course of those 35 days, federal employees missed two paychecks. I want the committee to think about the people that they know in their lives and think about how many of them would be troubled financially if they missed two paychecks at any given point during the year. The shutdown had a profound effect on Minnesota. We have 17,000 federal employees in Minnesota, 6,000 were either furloughed or forced to work without pay during the shutdown. These workers perform essential tasks for Minnesotans. A non-comprehensive list of federal employees impacted by the shutdown, either furloughed or forced to work without pay, includes our TSA agents, our air traffic controllers, our Federal Bureau of Investigation agents, our U.S. Attorney's Office, the federal prisons in Rochester, Waseca, and Sandstone, and our food inspectors. We can disagree on who was responsible for the shutdown, and we can disagree about what should have happened to get out of it, but we should all be able to agree that our federal employees should not have been put through the financial suffering that they went through. Fortunately, the shutdown did end a week and a half ago, but the government was only funded for 3 weeks, and we are about halfway through that time period. And there's no guarantee that we won't be facing another shutdown starting on February 15th. And, in fact, as I was driving into work this morning, I was listening to Minnesota Public Radio, and there was comments from both the White House and congressional leaders indicating that another government shutdown is very much still on the table. And, again, I say that not as a partisan comment. It's just a reality that our federal government has not worked through the underlying issues, and we may be in another situation in a few days where federal employees in Minnesota are being forced to work without pay. This bill creates a public-private partnership to help address this program and make interest-free loans available for federal employees. Private banks would lend the money, and the loans would be guaranteed by the state. The amount of the loan available will be the lesser of $5,000 or the after-tax monthly income of the federal employee, and a federal employee could take out three loans to replace 3 months' income. No interest can accrue during the shutdown or during the grace period that follows the shutdown. After the grace period, there's a 180-day repayment period in which interest can accrue, and the bank can make collection efforts in accordance with their collection policies. The program would be administered by deed, and $2.5 million would be transferred from the general fund to deed to cover the guarantee. That number comes if you assume that every single federal government employee who is eligible, who lives in Minnesota, participates in the program, and they take out the maximum amount available to them under the program, and there's a 3% default rate, you get to $2.5 million. Now, I think that's a very conservative way to look at it because I don't think every federal government employee will participate. I don't think that every federal government employee who does participate will take out the maximum. And I think since the federal government routinely provides back pay during shutdowns, I don't think there'd be a 3% default rate. But we want to be conservative in the way that we approach making sure that the state's living up to its end of the bargain. Any bank or credit union can participate in the program. And in fact, as I mentioned, we have edited the bill to make it more accessible for our community banks to make sure that everyone who wants to participate can participate. At previous hearings, we've heard from Sunrise Bank, who has stepped up to the plate and said that they would participate in this program. Rick Beeson from Sunrise was unable to be here this morning, but Teresa Kubas from the Bank Association will be speaking about the program in just a minute. And you'll also be hearing from at least one federal government employee who will tell you about how the federal government shutdown impacted her. During last fall's campaign, the people I spoke to expressed their disgust with partisan gamesmanship that has come to dominate Washington, D.C. The federal government shutdown is a clear example of what they find so objectionable, particularly as it impacts real people who work every day to serve Minnesotans, keeping us safe, protecting our food, keeping our economy strong. This bill is a chance to protect those everyday Minnesotans who just happen to work for the federal government from the partisan wrangling that we all hate. And with the chair's permission, I'd like to offer Teresa Kubas and Celia Hahn both a chance to speak.
Please state your name and then proceed.
Good morning. My name is Teresa Kubas. I'm with the Minnesota Bankers Association. The Minnesota Bankers are here today to speak on House File 319. We represent 96% of the banks in Minnesota, and during the federal government shutdown, our banks were doing everything they could for the furloughed employees, customers. Banks do not want to see their customers fall behind on payments and fall into tough financial times. Many of our members had programs put in place when the shutdown happened that would offer some interest-free loans or very small dollar interest loans and mortgage relief options. Banks advised their impacted customers to reach out if they needed some assistance. This bill would offer a voluntary program if another government shutdown were to occur. When Representative Stevenson reached out to me about the bill, we reached out to our Connecticut counterparts who also have a bill very similar to this to see how it was working there, and we heard positive reviews from them. As I mentioned, the bill is voluntary, which is always a preference for us, and when I reached out to Sunrise Bank, they said they would be interested in helping in this program. We believe with the programs the banks have in place during these times, there would be a limited need for a loan guarantee, but having a program would definitely help some that need the help. Thank you.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for either Representative Stevenson or Ms. Kubas. First of all, I appreciate your concern and appreciate the bill. I just have a couple questions. It says here there's 100% repayment guaranteed from Deed, who's going to administer the loans. And maybe this is for you, Ms. Kubas. Is that necessary to does it take out incentive for the banks to work with folks on repayment?
I think
Representative Stevenson.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Haley, I think that there's still a strong incentive to work on collection. To begin with, under the terms of the bill, the bank can only apply for the guarantee after they've gone through an ordinary collection process during a 180-day period following a grace period. So there's two incentives. One is that they have to demonstrate that they've attempted to collect on the loan in order to get the guarantee. And the second thing, it's a long time for the bank to be, holding that note. And so they would have an incentive to get their money back before going to the state.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it. And one additional question, Mr. Chair.
Before you proceed, I'd like to call the other testifier because of the time limit that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and then proceed.
Hi, good morning. My name is Celia Hahn. I am a transportation security officer at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. I am one of about 600 uniformed officers that you see when you go to the airport at the checkpoints, or you don't see us downstairs screening your bags. I've been with the TSA for a little over 16 years, and the possibility of a shutdown seems to come up several times a year, but generally nobody gets too worked up about it. While there probably really is never a good time for a government shutdown, this government shutdown was really not at a good time, with it being right before Christmas. After people had already spent their money and wrapped their presents and put them under the trees. I know I wouldn't have been able to get away with returning any of the gifts that my kids had already seen or shaken, counted. They knew exactly what they had under there. So for a time that is already busy and stressful for the majority of people anyway, to have this happen at that time was just made it a lot worse for hundreds of thousands of federal workers. I spoke at Representative Stevenson's press release the day before the shutdown ended. That was 34 days into the shutdown, and it was I was a little stressed out and emotional at the time, knowing for certain that I was missing my second paycheck. I mentioned during that press release that my twin boys had turned 9 in December and that I was holding off on planning their birthday party. In early January, they both had braces installed. I don't know if that's the right term to use, if you install braces, but previously scheduled appointments that were scheduled last fall, we had to carry on with. But they both had their braces put in. I held off on registering them for their mid-winter soccer clinic because I was afraid to spend the money on that. I was already getting emails for their late winter soccer clinic, their spring soccer and track registrations, and emails for discounted summer camp early registration offers. On some level, the thought of spending January and February at home with two 9-year-old boys that had no outlet for their physical activity was almost more terrifying than not receiving another paycheck. But we made it through. Nonetheless, the emails were coming. The book fair at the school was coming up. The classroom needed supplies, Valentine's Day parties, cards, birthday parties, all of that was still coming up. Normally in these situations, if things are hitting me all at once or a little tight, I can ask their dad for some additional help. However, he's a employee of Customs and Border Protection, and he was also furloughed and not receiving a paycheck. During the second week of the shutdown, I contacted my mortgage company just to get an idea if they were offering anything to federal employees in my position. At that time, they weren't, and they actually seemed to be kind of unaware of the situation that was going on and how people were actually being affected. They did offer to refinance my mortgage for me, though. The week before the shutdown ended, I contacted them again. By that time, they were offering deferment, which I decided to do. I also contacted my credit union to defer my car payment. While I did have savings in my account to cover these payments, I did not know how far I was going to need to stretch that savings out to cover the other things that can't be deferred. I was really putting my budgeting skills to the test. I knew that I was going to get paid back at some point, but I really did not want to come out of the shutdown in a worse off position than I was when I went into it. Knowing that I had an knowing that I had an option to temporarily replace my income without adding to my overall debt would have eased my anxieties. Talking to a bank representative that actually didn't make me feel like I was asking for a free handout because my pay was being withheld would have eased, I guess, some of the shame that you feel when you have to ask for help. Even with a 0% loan, as this bill is suggesting, I would probably still have deferred my mortgage and car payment. I would have used a loan like this to cover the things that can't be deferred, the things that I don't want to put on my credit card and accrue interest, like cell phone bills and car insurance, medical copays, prescriptions, groceries, gas, kids' activities.
To the witness, we are supposed to be done at 9:30. We're going to go till 9:35.
Okay.
So
I can talk
fast. Wrap it up.
Yep.
I know you've come a long way through snow and traffic. And
all right. Okay, so that was just my personal story. But, you know, my coworkers, they all have expenses as well. You know, rent that can't be deferred, single parents like myself, college tuition, daycare, diapers. And many of us also have partners or spouses that were also furloughed. Many of us are veterans and active military. But we all felt the same sense of frustration. Last week when I sat in this the committee hearing, it was mentioned that that somebody had mentioned that they thought maybe perhaps federal employees would just take out the maximum amount of $15,000 and then not pay it back. And I just wanted to mention that, you know, as federal employees, it's part of our code of conduct to meet our financial obligations to pay back our debt in a timely manner. Our jobs literally depend on that we do that. Our background checks, our security clearances all depend on our credit. So the likelihood of that is probably a lot less likely with the general public. So for federal employees that are caught in the middle of a government shutdown, you know, this would just make things a lot less stressful for us to continue to do the jobs that we really aren't being paid to do and to keep consistency in our lives and the lives of the people who depend on us.
Thank you so very much. We have a couple of questions here, and so I'm going to make a committee chairman decision. If you've got a question that's going to take longer than 15 seconds to answer, leave it alone. Call in Representative Severson, and he will gladly show up at your office. So, Representative Haley.
Just a procedural question, Mr. Chair. Do we have a fiscal note with this bill if we are going to be moving it along today?
No, it's going to Ways and Means, and they'll get it there.
Is that that's the procedure at this point on all bills? Or
I believe so, but I'm not. Go ahead, 15 seconds.
Mr. Chair, representatives, a fiscal note has been requested because of the delete everything amendment. One on that has not been able to be finished. It will probably be done tomorrow, but it wasn't able to be done today.
Representative Gunther.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Stevenson, this is a good example of Minnesota Nice can work. And it's a good effort. I don't know how effective it'll be. It'll be a progress, and we're going to have to watch very carefully. I hope it has the effect that you'd like to have. I think we have to do things like this to make the people that elect us know that we care for them.
Representative Dabney.
I'm smart enough to ask, Mr. Chair.
I am not, Mr. Chair. Just an observation from
I haven't called on you yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Members, we are well over. So would you care to renew your motion?
Sure, I renew my motion to move the bill to Ways and Means.
All those in favor of House File 319 being moved to Ways and Means, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
I think you've got the votes. Members, the business in front of the committee today is done. We are adjourned.